Halo.
Just over 2 minutes of classic Bob Dylan there, Subterranean Homesick Blues. And yes, many, many, many books have been written about Dylan over the decades, but a new volume offers something a wee bit different, because in it are the voices of fans and people who know him, who've seen him play in tiny wee venues, festivals, big arenas. Bob Dylan, The Day I Was There, is out in paperback, packed with anecdotes from folk who were there from the early days in his hometown before the move to New York, his evolution in music through folk to the electric years, Woodstock, Basement Tape. Let's find out more from Neil Cosser, the author who's with me. Welcome to the programme.
Hello, Janice. How are you?
Very good, thank you. It's always good to play Dylan in the show, let's face it.
Oh, I know, yes.
And I should say, if you're listening and you have access to the internet, we've got some images from the book on our show page, the afternoon show at the BBC Radio Scotland webpage, so you can have a wee look at those. So is this something you've been mulling over for a while then, this idea of bringing together fan and kind of acquaintance recollections of the live Dylan?
Well, it is really. I did a similar book on David Bowie last year, which seems to go down quite well. And we've also published books on Pink Floyd and The Who and The Stones as well, called I Was There. But after doing the Bowie book, which I really enjoyed doing, I thought, well, I've got to do Bob Dylan next, because he's had such an amazing career and I'm a pretty big fan as well. So this was a joy to put together. It's so enjoyable talking to people about their experiences, and just sort of, it really paints a picture for me of, you know, what Dylan means to so many people.
Yeah. Do you know how many times you've seen Dylan? Have you seen him a fair few times?
I've seen him once.
Is that all?
It is. I went to see him only about 6 years ago. I have a very good friend who is fairly wealthy, and he's retired now, even though he's fairly young. And all he does, he goes fishing and he goes to see Bob Dylan.
Oh, what
he's
a life.
Seen, I know, he goes, travels the world. So he took me, when he realised I'd never seen him, he says, you've got to go. So I went to Nottingham, of all places.
So he flew you to New York or something?
No.
He took you to Nottingham.
The
Neil,
reason he's
I'm
so
sorry.
Wealthy is, I know. but I really enjoyed the show. It was just amazing to see him on stage. His band was fantastic. And I love the way he didn't say a single word to the audience.
Yeah.
And at times it was quite difficult to actually work out what the song was he was playing, but it was thoroughly enjoyable. Have you seen him?
I've seen him a few times. I've got a brother who's seen him many, many times. I must ask him how many times, actually, and he's very good at impersonating Dylan. But it's so interesting, because there are all sorts of theses have been done over the years, recently about, in terms of the voice of Dylan. You know, it's fascinating, because there is the really groggy voice, and then there's a sweet voice too, from earlier on in his career. And there's been an evolution in terms of, as we find out in the book, of what he does on stage. I think latterly we're just like, certainly I feel delighted to be in the same room as Bob Dylan, and he doesn't have to speak to me. He doesn't have to say, hello, Glasgow. I'd rather he didn't, actually.
I'm the same.
So, yeah, so as you say, it's a mix of work and pleasure for you, getting these anecdotes and tales from the variety of people. How did you put the call out? Did you use social media or what?
I did. I think you know, Janice, I run This Day in Music.
Yeah.
And we have a really huge following on Facebook. So I actually just did two posts on Facebook asking people if they'd ever seen Dylan or they knew of anyone who had, just to get in touch. And it's amazing how it then snowballs.
Yeah.
I'd phone people up, I'd email them, message them, and just have lots of phone conversations with people. And some people are fantastic. They would just submit by email a fantastic story and with a photograph.
Perfect.
So the job was done.
Yeah.
Other people I would phone up, you know, or perhaps contact to get more information. But it's one thing I really like about the book that I'm very pleased with. We ask fans to also submit any ticket stubs they've got or memorabilia.
Yeah.
But more importantly, photographs of themselves from that period.
Mm-hmm.
Because the book just does cover from 1959 until the end of 1979.
Yeah.
So it does seem to capture the feel of those two decades.
It does,
well.
And it's such an emotional thing, isn't it, for all of us for whom music's important, even just reading about other people. It's such a big part of people's lives and of their growing up. And let's think about a specific one. There's Patrice Hamilton, and there's a photograph of her looking very 60s, and she talks about seeing Dylan at the Albert Hall on the 9th of May 1965. Incredible sense of excitement, you know, remembering getting made up, all the slap on and the clothes and all the rest of it.
I know she paints a really great picture, actually. She even says, you know, she wasn't too sure what to wear. I think she was far too overdressed. And she was trying to make notes as well as she was watching the show. And for a lot of these people, it was their first ever gig as well, which, you know, is amazing, I think, to see someone like Bob Dylan as your first gig.
Yes.
And, you know, that tiny figure, as he would appear, to come on stage, just him and the acoustic guitar and the harmonica rack, which apparently loads of people had never seen before, I suppose.
Yes, yes.
And it was just different times. I know in quite a few of the accounts, people talk about buying, you know, their first Bob Dylan album in the 60s.
Yeah.
And, of course, you'd have to order it from your local, wouldn't even be a record shop, it was your local high street appliance shop where they'd have a little record department. And it would take 5 or 6 weeks to arrive.
Amazing.
And of course, then you would treasure it so much because it was your hard-earned cash, you know, and you can just visualise these people sat in the bedrooms with the little mono record players listening to the albums over and over and over again, as I did as a kid, you know.
It's so much better than the virtual experience, that's for sure, although I do the virtual experience too. At Patrice's, the gig she went to at the Royal Albert Hall, 9th of May 1965, Dylan sang this song.
Come gather round, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone, for the times, they are a-changing. Writers and critics who prophesize with your pen, and keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin, and there's no telling who that it's naming. 'Cause the loser now will be later to win, for the times, they are a-changing.
There you go, just a little soupçon of the times they are changing from Bob Dylan. Neil Coster is with me. We're talking about the book Bob Dylan, The Day I Was There, recollections from people who were there, who saw him live in all sorts of venues around the world. And I'm sure, Neil, all sorts of people listening will, hearing that song, will take them back to playing it over and over again in one of those little mono record players many years ago. The book is going to take people back to all sorts of places. Were there any particular stories that surprised you or made you laugh or smile, or you just really liked?
Well, definitely. I mean, there's a story quite late in the book, a guy called Jacques Levy, who wrote quite a few of the songs on the Desire album. And he tells a great tale of, he'd actually co-written the lyrics to Chestnut Mare with Roger McGuinn.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently he met Dylan once previously, but he just happened to bump into him in the street in New York. They went for a drink, got talking, and Dylan apparently said, look, I'm working on my new album. I would like to work with someone. I really like what you did on Chestnut Mare with your lyrics. So they went out to the country to Dylan's home, and Jacques tells this great story where they go to the supermarket to get supplies in to buy some wine and bread and cheese and stuff. And apparently he's there walking through the supermarket with Dylan pushing the trolley as they're putting the wine and the biscuits and the bread and the stuff in, which I think pictures is just a great image. And apparently, also in the same story, as they were working through the day, they'd work on new songs, they'd go to the same bar each night for a drink and a bite to eat. And apparently Dylan would take his guitar and just go up to any random person that would listen and play them the new song to see what they thought.
I'm so excited listening to this. It's incredible. And it's, every time I hear the name, the freewheeling Bob Dylan, I'm just thinking of him pushing a trolley around a supermarket now. But a man's got to eat. A man's got to eat what a man's got to eat. And then, you know, there's Ray Folk on the Second Isle of Wight Festival in 1969, which was a real comeback show for Dylan, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, because it was his first big appearance after his motorcycle accident in 66, was that?
Yes.
And again, Ray tells a great story in there. Apparently, because they'd had a festival the year before, hadn't they? A much smaller festival. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to up the ante. And they had a wish list of three artists. They had the Beatles, Elvis Presley and Bob Dylan. They realised that the Beatles had just finished Abbey Road and were about to split. They decided that Elvis Presley would never appear in a field, so they went for Bob Dylan. And it's just these two guys, very young guys as well, in their early 20s, working from the mum's house on the Isle of Wight, and they got hold of Dylan's agent, put the call in. They were interested, and they flew over to negotiate, do the deal, and that was it. They booked Bob Dylan, and then the whole festival just fell into place after that, which is quite amazing when you think, again, in those days, everything was just done on the phone. You would just talk to people and organise the whole thing. And it was obviously a huge success. And there's actually quite a few stories from the Isle of Wight in 69 in the book.
Yeah.
And there's some pretty good pictures that a guy called Malcolm Colton, who's one of the contributors who was there, he very kindly sent me a whole batch of photos, which I've never seen before. And there's a great one, actually, of around the front of the stage at the 69 Isle of Wight Festival. They had a little enclosure with a little white picket fence around it, you know, only about 2 foot high,
yeah,
which obviously nowadays would not keep anybody out. But that was for the celebs. And in there was John Lennon, George Harrison, Ringo Starr, Mick Jagger, Keith Richards, Sid Barrett, Jane Fonda, Elton John, all these people.
Amazing.
But all the fans just left them to it, apparently.
Yeah,
just
watch
the show.
I'll bet. Well, if people want to go on our website at the BBC Radio Scotland, look for the afternoon show, you'll see a selection of some of those cracking images, photographs of Dylan, other people, and brilliant memorabilia, including great posters, Bob Dylan, Joan Baez, Rolling Thunder Review. It's all there. Neil, a terrific book. Thank you very much for joining me.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
Very pleased to have you on. Thank you, Neil Costa there. The book is Bob Dylan, The Day I Was There, and it's out now in paperback.